Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Garrettson and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Garrettson and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find them in doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. Well, there was some news in the last couple of days with the Chiefs adding yet another player through this offseason. Now, it's been a relatively quiet offseason. They still are trying to fill in the pieces in certain spots where maybe it's more of a depth situation. It's not so much of adding impact players. They did that earlier on in the offseason. But the Chiefs brought back Jerick McKinnon and added him to this already, I guess, full running back room. Right? They added the running back through the draft. They added one running back through free agency with Ronald Jones. And now bring back Jerick McKinnon, who was really the bright spot in the running back room through the postseason. And I guess the further we went into the offseason, I was under the impression that they were going to let Jerick McKinnon walk. And then when they drafted Isaiah Pacheco out of Rutgers in the seventh round, I thought that would be the end for Jerick McKinnon. Maybe he'd land on his feet somewhere else, but I at least thought my impressions went from right after the postseason, they were going to bring Jerick McKinnon back in a one-year deal because he fits that running back room really well when he's healthy. I mean, you could argue at the tail end of the season, through the postseason, Jerick McKinnon was the Chiefs' best running back. So I have no issues with bringing back Jerick McKinnon. But now the question remains, okay, who's the odd man out, right? Who will the Chiefs let go once we go through training camp, once we go through preseason? Either won't be Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We know that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is this team's number one running back until he loses that spot. It is his to lose. Number two on that list, it's going to come down to Ronald Jones, Jerick McKinnon, or Derek Gore. I don't see Isaiah Pacheco taking the number two running back spot. I see him being more of a three or a four. I've heard some people say, well, now Ronald Jones is the odd man out because he's not a very good pass blocker. He's not great in the passing game, but he is somebody down in the red zone that you give it to that can punch it in. Kind of a Darrell Williams type, but I still feel like Darrell Williams was a better pass catcher than Ronald Jones is. Now, all of these guys, with the exception of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, are more so expendable with their contract. Like, the Chiefs are not going to take the gamble and just cut Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the preseason. That's just not going to happen. He will be this team's number one back when they open up against the Arizona Cardinals, who now have Darrell Williams, by the way, so they'll be able to face Darrell Williams in just week one of the NFL regular season. But Clyde will be this team's number one back. If it were today, if I was controlling the Chiefs roster, I'm putting Jerick McKinnon as the number two back. I think Jerick McKinnon, though he's only 5'9", he's 215, he's one of the hardest runners in this backfield. He's one of the best pass catchers. He's the best screen catching running back. He's a great pass blocker. And you could see this offense in the postseason was the best it was all year. And that's because Jerick McKinnon gave them a different look. Now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was great in the AFC Championship game. He didn't get the carries that maybe he should have. I want to say he was averaging over 6.5 yards per carry, but only had 9 carries against the Cincinnati Bengals, the last game the Chiefs played this past season. But Jerick McKinnon against Pittsburgh, Jerick McKinnon against Buffalo was phenomenal. right? He was great in the screen game, and you know that Andy Reid loves to run screen plays for his running back. Now it's a matter of what they can do with the ball. Can they run behind blockers well? Can they be patient enough? And that's a big part of being a running back in this Chiefs offense. You have to be patient. And you've been able to see, and with the exception of Jamaal Charles, I would say that most of the running backs that Andy Reid's had in Kansas City, they're more of this type of group, the expendable group of it's really the hot hand. You know, once Jamaal Charles tore his ACL for the last time in Kansas City against Chicago, I want to say that was back in 2015, they went with Charcandrick West and Spencer Ware. Both guys, it was just an interchangeable type of backfield. It was who has the hot hand that game. If Charcandrick West is rolling, he's going to get the majority of the carries. If it was Spencer Ware, he's going to get the majority of the carries. Then you get into 2017 and 18. Now, I did say explosive back. There was only Jamaal Charles for Andy Reid. I would say Kareem Hunt was a very explosive running back and fit this offense very well. But off-field situation forced him out of Kansas City, you know, with the incident in that Cleveland hotel, I think hallway it was. But since then, since Kareem Hunt, since Jamaal Charles, it's been guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams, you know, Jerick McKinnon. Now you add in Ronald Jones. I mean, throughout this time in Kansas City or Andy Reid's tenure, it's been, can you be a patient running back? Are you a good pass blocker? And can you catch out of the backfield? And the only guy right now between Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jerick McKinnon, Ronald Jones, and Derek Gore that can't really thrive in the passing game is Ronald Jones. But I don't know if I'm in the spot now where I would want to cut Ronald Jones. I'd be okay with maybe stashing Derek Gore on the practice squad, because that's where he was the majority of the year. And let's be real, Derek Gore was a effective running back. I liked what I saw from Derek Gore last year. But let's not sit here and say that Derek Gore was this team's number one or number two running back. Hell, he wasn't even the number three. It went Clyde and Darrell, and then Jerick McKinnon. So Derek Gore was this team's number four running back. Hell, maybe you keep four running backs on the roster. At one point last year, didn't they have four running backs on the roster with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell, Jerick McKinnon, and Derek Gore? I mean, you could, and then you stash Isaiah Pacheco on the practice squad. It'll come down to probably Derek Gore and Isaiah Pacheco of who you want to place on the practice squad, and then it will be who's better on special teams, because that's how you stay on this roster in Kansas City. I just want to believe there's a way you can have Ronald Jones and Jerick McKinnon on the roster at the same time. But that's not always the way the Chiefs work. You know, they've been known in the preseason, they take flyers on guys. And I think Ronald Jones is definitely a significant flyer. He was a great running back for Tampa Bay in their Super Bowl run. Then they brought in Leonard Fournette, and he lost that spot. And last year, he was not very effective, didn't get the same amount of carries he did as in the Super Bowl season. And now he's trying to find his footing again in Kansas City. I mean, obviously, the Chiefs like him, and I think the Chiefs signed him knowing they were going to let Darrell Williams walk. But then they went through the draft and had Isaiah Pacheco, and we thought, okay, there's your running back room. There's the four running backs. You have Clyde at the top. Rojo is number two. Then you have Derek Gore and Isaiah Pacheco interchangeable at three and four. Then a couple of days ago, you add in Jerick McKinnon. And Jerick McKinnon was your number one running back in the postseason. So it's not a bad problem to have. There's a lot of depth, and you know that running backs can get banged up. Clyde's been hurt the first 2 years in Kansas City. So you need to have that type of depth where if somebody goes down, you can't just have some practice squad guy, right? You can't just rely on a practice squad guy to carry the workload of your backfield. Though the Chiefs are a passing offense, you can't just have an ineffective running back in your backfield. You have to have somebody that can give this defense a look, right? It's the same thing with the wide receiver group. You can't just throw out some practice squad guy that's never played because they're not going to cover him. They're going to put him in single coverage, and he's going to be probably stopped. So with this backfield, let's say Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I'm knocking on wood here because I don't want to see that happen to Clyde, but let's say he does follow the same pattern that's happened in the first 2 years, and he gets banged up or hurt, and he misses 3 or 4 weeks. Well, now you can turn to Ronald Jones. You can turn to Jerick McKinnon. You can turn to Derek Gore. But I just wouldn't want them to go into this saying, well, our running back room will be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Ronald Jones, and Isaiah Pacheco. Because what if Clyde got hurt, Ronald Jones is not the running back you think he is, and then you're relying on Isaiah Pacheco to carry the workload in the backfield. No, it's okay to have five running backs at your disposal. You have to stash one of them on the practice squad. That'll be Pacheco or Derek Gore. And you can roll with that because Andy Reid can make running backs good. I think the only running backs we've seen that have come into Kansas City in the last couple of years that just haven't thrived have been Le'Veon Bell and LeSean McCoy, and they were at the tail end of their career. I think when I look at this group, they're not going to be the star-studded group. They're not going to be the ones that carry the ball 15 to 18 times a game. No, I think that for the most part, they'll carry it 11 to 12 times a game, hopefully catch about 2 to 3 passes, and they protect Patrick Mahomes in the backfield. And when it comes down to it, that in reality is more important than maybe running the ball effectively, because if they're blocking for Mahomes and they miss their block or they can't block and Mahomes gets blown up by defensive linemen who now are all in the AFC West, right? Khalil Mack's now in San Diego. He's in L.A. Max Crosby's still in Vegas. We know about Denver's defensive line. Bradley Chubb's still there. This is a very strong AFC West in terms of their defensive line and their edge rushers. So you can't just have a running back that's solid running the ball but can't block worth a darn. So you've seen that, with the exception of Ronald Jones, that's been the Chiefs' message this offseason, that when they're going to draft a guy like Isaiah Pacheco, you got to be good in the pass block. You have to be good in the screen game, which, from his film, he looks like he is. Now, Marco, when you look at this group, I think the odd man out, if you were going to carry four running backs, would be Derek Gore, because that's where he was stashed for the majority of last season. He was on the practice squad until some guys got banged up. I think I'm okay rolling into week one with Clyde as the number one back, Jerick McKinnon is the two, Ronald Jones is the 2/3, and then you carry Isaiah Pacheco, because I believe Isaiah Pacheco might be this team's kick return guy. He might be a special teams guru. I feel like those four right there, I'm okay carrying four running backs. I understand that maybe a lot of people like Derek Gore, and you would take him over Isaiah Pacheco, or maybe you're somebody that wants to cut Ronald Jones. But where do you sit right now with this running back group, with those five guys? Who is the odd man out?
Well, right now, my running back room would look like Clyde, Jones, McKinnon, and then Michael Burton, the fullback, of course, because he does get categorized as a ball carrier when talking about the numbers of who you can keep on, or the numbers of who you keep in this position group. You also got to remember, I think with Gore and Pacheco, you keep who's more valuable to the special teams, and of course, who you think can be who has the most upside going forward. Now, Jerick McKinnon, if let's say I'm fine with him being back. I'm good with him being on this roster, but I don't think he has a permanent spot just because he was on this team last year. The Chiefs waited to re-sign him and bring him back in. I don't know exactly whether that's because McKinnon may have been looking for other offers, seeing what was the best available one that comes to him, but I'm not immediately putting him on the 53-man, nor am I immediately putting Ronald Jones on there also. But I do like the options that they have there, because if Gore aren't players that can make the 53-man roster, I'm fine with having them take up a practice squad spot. But at the end of the day, too, bringing him in does is add competition for the spots. And I think really the only safe one is Clyde Edwards-Helaire at this time, just because he's still playing on his rookie contract, first-round pick, and was a starter going into the season last year. After that, it's a toss-up, and I don't know what could happen. I think what benefits Ronald Jones is that he is a guy that can give you 16 games. He's young. He's only 25 years old this season, which may be towards the older side for running backs, but I think every offense needs a goal line type of running back, and he fits the mold for that position more so than any of the other running backs on this team. So I think the four running backs I see right now are the veterans plus Michael Burton there also, because you really can't go beyond that number because of the wide receiver group this year. Who are you going to keep there? How many wide receivers are you going to keep? And then, of course, the secondary on defense. You got a lot of young rookies on there. Some are going to have to get cut. Maybe not, though. Maybe they decide to go heavy on the defense this year and keep more than they usually would in previous seasons. But as of right now, Pacheco and Gore are more so not on my solidified depth chart going into the season, just simply because I don't know exactly what Pacheco is right now. He's a day all that we know is he's a day three pick with some really good speed and possibly could be serviceable on the special teams. Gore, we saw the flashes of what he could do last year, but I think the veterans is right now, as early as it is, they have the spot in over them.
Yeah, I totally forgot about adding in Michael Burton there. You can't carry four running backs. Right. You'd want to carry that four. So I'm with you there. And I think, to your point, yeah, Ronald Jones is still 25. It's not like Ronald Jones is some 29, 30-year-old back that has the name, but you just want to keep him there as the number three guy. No, I think you could roll in now with Clyde, Jerick McKinnon, and Ronald Jones as your three, then Michael Burton obviously is your four, because they're going to carry Michael Burton. You need a fullback. So I would try and stash then Derek Gore and Isaiah Pacheco on the practice squad. Now, is there maybe room to put them just strictly on special teams? Now, that's, I guess, a question for another day, because another guy that comes into the conversation in terms of, you know, skill guys is Jerrion Ealy, the undrafted free agent out of Ole Miss. So for Pacheco, and for Derek Gore for that matter, and Ealy, those are all guys that maybe could make an impact this year in the kick return game or the punt return game. Because we're now that Tyreek Hill is gone, I don't want Mecole Hardman returning kicks. I don't want Mecole Hardman returning punts. I want somebody out there that is strictly there just to return kicks, just to return punts. They're not on the field other than that. Because that's something that kind of Mecole Hardman early on was doing. I mean, he was in his rookie year, he was getting snaps at wide receiver, but Mecole Hardman for a little bit was just predominantly on special teams. He was just going out there, and when he gets a significant amount of playing time, it was being this team's number one kick returner, and it allowed Tyreek Hill to just focus on his wide receiver game, and you didn't want Tyreek Hill to get hurt on a punt return or a kick return. Now, he gave you a different element. He was the most explosive kick returner the Chiefs have had since Dante Hall, but the risk of it is way too much. Not saying that, you know, undrafted free agents and seventh-round picks are expendable, like you're just throwing them out there, and if they get hurt, oh well. No, that's still not good for your team, but when you look at the impact Mecole Hardman can give this offense as opposed to Isaiah Pacheco or Jerrion Ealy, I mean, you tell me which is more important. If Mecole Hardman goes down, now you're trying to scramble with your wide receiver group. Maybe you have to bring somebody up from the practice squad. But with this running back room, I think Marco and I both agree that you got to find a way to keep all three of those guys in McKinnon, Ronald Jones, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and you can get away with maybe stashing Derek Gore and Isaiah Pacheco on the practice squad. But we'll see how that roster all shakes out as we get closer to training camp and get closer to preseason football, because that will be our best measurement of who really fits in this offense for those number three and number four running back spots on the depth chart. All right, when we come back here on The Shift, we'll hear what Deshaun Watson had to say on ESPN yesterday, and I'll be honest, he's not really helping his case any more than he already could have. So we'll dive into that when we come back here. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. So we know at this point that anything said about Deshaun Watson, whether it's from his lawyer or from Deshaun Watson himself, it just doesn't help his case. But I think it's now up to 24 lawsuits against Watson. And no matter if it's him defending himself, trying to defend himself, or his lawyer defending himself, it's literally not helping his case. Metaphorically, literally, figuratively, no way in hell has anything been positive in making you believe that Deshaun Watson is innocent. Now, with the justice system, it's always innocent until proven guilty. But I think in this situation with Deshaun Watson, like if it was, not to say that the legitimacy, tongue twister right there. If it was one or two lawsuits against him, not saying they wouldn't be true, But this guy has 24 against him.
And what, 66 allegations?
66 allegations. And he's just basically saying, well, I didn't force anybody, I didn't harass anybody. And we do have audio of it. He went and talked on SportsCenter yesterday. I think it was after one of the Browns practices or the mandatory minicamp. And again, he's not believable. He's just simply not believable. But here was the audio yesterday on SportsCenter from Deshaun Watson defending himself about these allegations.
I think that question kind of, you know, triggered a lot of people, not just women in general, but a lot of people from this, you know, in the league, from women to males and things like that. And what I was saying is, yes, I never assaulted, disrespected, or harassed anyone. But at the same time, I do understand that I do have regrets as far as the impact that it has on the community and people outside of just myself. You know, and that includes my family, that includes this organization, that includes my teammates in this locker room that have to answer to these questions, that includes, you know, the fan base of the Cleveland Browns, that includes males, females, everyone across the world, you know. So that's one thing I do regret, is the impact that it's have triggered on so many people. And, it's tough to have to, you know, do it.
But as far as your actions, you don't have any regrets about anything that you've actually done?
You know, like I said, I never assaulted anyone, or I never harassed anyone, or I never disrespected anyone, or I never forced anyone to do anything.
That was Deshaun Watson yesterday on ESPN answering more questions about these allegations. Now, I still don't think that's the worst thing that's been said in trying to defend him. I mean, his lawyer basically went on a Houston radio station and said, to an extent, Marco, correct me if I'm wrong here, that prostitution is not illegal. He said, this whole thing is about massages, right? And he said, happy endings are not illegal, right? And Deshaun Watson is paying Instagram models, right, to come over to his mansion or whatever and massage him. But then he came back and said, oh, that's not what I meant or whatever. I'm like, this is the guy's lawyer, right? His lawyer is basically going out there and saying what he did is not illegal. And he's like, oh, well, never mind. I didn't mean to say it like that. And it's like, you're a lawyer. You're defending him. And you're clearly not doing that good of a job. And every time either his lawyer or Watson opens his mouth about this, it's not very believable. It's really not believable. And then the reporter doubles down and asks the question, so you're saying you don't regret anything that you've done? He said, like I said, I've never assaulted anybody. I've never harmed anybody. And it's like, well, if that's the case, how are there 24 lawsuits against you and 66 allegations? Like, we've seen these things happen in the movie industry. We've seen it with athletes. We've seen it in politics. There are very few times that somebody with this many allegations, this many lawsuits, is just completely scot-free. Right? That's not likely. Now, I know that you still have to follow the guidelines of innocent until proven guilty, right? And, you know, if he's not proven guilty, then Deshaun Watson will be able to play football this season. But I think it's now less and less likely that Deshaun Watson will, because there's so much surrounding this. And by the way, did the Browns make the dumbest move of all time giving Deshaun Watson that type of money? And also, when you think of an ethical standpoint, giving a guy like Deshaun Watson that type of money is just gross. It's absolutely gross that with all this going on, right, all this bad publicity, you know, with these women coming forward, and then he gets off and they're not proceeding with it, and then they just give him a mega contract to be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. That's a bad look. They didn't really do any of their due diligence. They thought, okay, he's fine now. He's in the clear, and he's a top five quarterback, which, in all honesty, Deshaun Watson is. When Deshaun Watson was playing, he was a top five quarterback of the NFL. Hell, we were talking about the rivalry between Mahomes and Watson. That was going to be the rivalry for the next decade, not Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. But then when he was not playing in the NFL for a year, we sort of forgot about Deshaun Watson. But clearly the Browns, who had Baker Mayfield, a former number one overall pick, you know, they want to get to the next level. And the NFL is not this sunshine and rainbows type of league. More often than not, teams will look the other way. They will look the other way when they're trying to bring in certain players. Hell, you know, I think every single team, all 32, have brought on a player and looked the other way. We don't have to go too far, right in the backyard. I mean, Damon Arnett, at the tail end of the season, the Chiefs took a flyer on him. Now, it was a low-risk, high-reward type of situation, but Damon Arnett was a Chief for, what, a week?
Yeah.
And then once again had gun charges against him. I mean, that's just, you look the other way at guys that maybe had made a mistake, and he's not the first one in Kansas City. We're all not naive to that, and I think, you know, teams like the Cowboys, I think the Vikings are up there near the top too, that, you know, the NFL wants to give second chances to players, but there's also a limit to second chances, right? That it's what did they do the first time? So if a guy is 21 years old, okay, and let's say that he, gosh, what would you say, Marco, you get in trouble with the law, what would you say is a minor misdemeanor or something, but not to the extent, like I don't want to say like battery would be, okay, I got a better one.
Like paraphernalia type thing? Like get caught with some paraphernalia?
Yeah, I guess that's one that I'd be like, if you gave them a one-year deal, like I'm not going to be up in arms about it. Or let's say you got in a fight. Let's say a rookie gets in a fight at a nightclub, a bar, you know, they've been out drinking, they get in a fight, they beat up somebody. Okay, they're charged with battery.
Yeah, it's domestic.
Or assault.
There you go, assault.
And I think that most people at this point go, okay, he's going to get a second chance in the NFL. But more often than not, they're given like a one-year deal. 1 year, $1 million. Maybe it's like $850K. It's a very low reward for that player who once had a $4 to $5, maybe $6 million signing bonus or something around the lines of that. And now they're making way less than that. But the Browns looked at Deshaun Watson and said, you know what? He does deserve a second chance. Let's make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. Like that's rewarding somebody that really doesn't deserve to be rewarded. And who knows? If Deshaun Watson plays this season, I'm leaning towards the NFL is going to suspend him because it feels like every single week that another allegation comes out. No, another lawsuit. And all we're really seeing from Watson and his lawyer is kind of half-assing defending themselves. Just kind of saying, well, it's not true. I've never done that. Well, how can we believe you? Like it's your word against 66 other people or 24 other people. That's just not believable to me. And I think that's where you have to kind of look at this type of situation and where you believe in it. Are you somebody that sides with Deshaun Watson and says he's innocent until proven guilty, right? All these 24 people, all these 66 people, they're all lying. These are all fake. They're trying to get a lot of money out of Deshaun Watson. But I think the more information that's come out, it's just hard to side with Watson. Right, it's really, really tough to side with Watson. And I think from an ethical standpoint, when you look at the whole ordeal, you want to blame a lot of the Browns in this because, I mean, the Browns have made moves like this before. They've been one of those teams to give a lot of players with off-field trouble second chances. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always work out, but I'm not going to just point the finger at the Browns and say they're the only one that does it because everybody in the NFL has. I just think it was such an unethical thing to do to give Deshaun Watson that type of money when he was – not even really in the clear yet, right? Deshaun Watson was nowhere near in the clear. And now we've seen it. They might have given Deshaun Watson all this money and he may never play a single snap for the Browns. We don't know that yet. Now, even if he does, I mean, what do you think the public reaction to Deshaun Watson is going to be? His reputation's ruined forever, right? And I'm not saying, I'm not boo-hooing that and saying, well, poor Deshaun Watson, right? Because clearly with these allegations, I don't think Deshaun Watson's a guy you should feel bad for.
Mm-hmm.
But Marco, in this problematic, I guess, atmosphere in Cleveland right now, is Deshaun Watson even close to believable? When you heard those words from him yesterday, is he even close to believable? Or anything his lawyer says, are they close to believable where you could look at it and honestly say, there are 66 people lying about what went on?
I do think that Deshaun Watson is believable because I truly think that he believes he didn't do anything wrong, but that doesn't eliminate the fact that he did not commit a crime in a sense, because that's a thing with some people when sometimes they don't think they do something that's harmful, but it really is. Now, that's just them, though. That's just something that you can't change about somebody. because that's just who they are. So I believe that Watson believes what he says, but not because he didn't do it, but because he probably really thinks he didn't do anything too wrong. And maybe that sounds like I'm calling him a bad person, and I try not to judge until, once again, a person is proven innocent or guilty, because that's the facts right there. This is a very messy situation. It's something that it's something that can be a distraction from it's something that can be a distraction from the actual football. And that's why I think agree with you also about the NFL suspending him, because Deshaun Watson has done nothing but been a distraction this offseason. And not for the same reasons that Aaron Rodgers was a distraction last year. That's two different types of distractions. Two different ways that the NFL was publicized in the news. So I believe what he says only because he believes what he truly says. But once again, that's the number is alarming. The confessions from the victims is graphic, disturbing, and you wouldn't want anybody to have to experience that. But at the end of the day, it is proven innocent until guilty, and unfortunately, that is a great way to go about life, because it helps you from not judging others too quick, too soon. It makes you think, read the evidence, be knowledgeable of what's at hand, what's in front of the information that's in front of you, the case that's in front of you, and then you can form your own opinion. But also, we've seen our United States judicial system not serve justice to those who deserve it. And so, even if he walks away innocent and not found guilty on any of these lawsuits, one of the 24, there's still 32 other women who haven't gotten into the lawsuit, but have spoken up and shared their story. Whether that's because they feel that they needed to share with how many women are stepping forward, whether that's because they don't care about getting something in return, they just know how important their story helps the cases of these 24 women. And so that's the part that worries me going forward, is if justice is going to be served, or if justice is going to be served the right way, if the people who deserve to get hit with punishments. But you know, we've seen cases in the past where the victim was lying and the suspect was innocent. But once again, this is a lot. This is a large number right there. Large number. It's not just a handful. It's 66 victims who have shared their stories. And there's a lot of damage control here for the Browns, their PR staff, and it's not fair to them if Deshaun Watson isn't telling the truth. But I think he is, but once again, I think that's because he doesn't think what he knows he did was wrong, in a sense.
I like how you bring that up, because you remember when you were little and you did something bad, right? You were nervous about doing something bad, and you tried every way in your mind to believe like what you did wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
So you're trying to convince yourself that I didn't screw up that bad. And you're asking friends, you're like, it's not that bad when I did this, right? Here's why I did it, but it can't be that bad. That feels exactly kind of the case with Deshaun Watson, where you say he can be believable because he in his mind may think he did nothing wrong, right? He may look at it and say, no, I hired these Instagram models to come massage me, and we did have something going on, but I didn't force them to do anything. I didn't harass anybody. They willingly interacted with me.
And see, his definition of force maybe is not the definition that someone a victim of a situation like this, you know, would define it as. Maybe he didn't force them physically, but mentally get into someone's head and influence them in that way, possibly.
Yeah, because he's a star-powered quarterback. He's got millions and millions of dollars. He's hiring them to come out to his mansion and massage him. And I think he said he hired like five massage therapists there. Like, it's like he didn't have one, right? He didn't use the athletic trainer either, who could have been his massage in the locker or massage therapist or masseuse, whatever you want to call it. But I think in his mind, when he knows he's screwed up, I'm sure that with all these confessions, right, something bad happened. I think there's two outcomes to this. Number one, you know, Deshaun Watson he's found guilty, and he never plays again in the NFL. Or number two, they don't have enough evidence, or they can't find actual hard evidence where he could be guilty, and he gets to play. But we don't really believe that he's completely innocent. Like, I don't think that Deshaun Watson just was, like, these 66 allegations are all completely wrong, and he was just this normal, happy-go-lucky quarterback that was like, oh my gosh, it was wrong place, wrong time. No, I don't see that being all those were lies. Right? There's too much against him. And like you said, you want to see how it plays out. You don't want to just come badmouth somebody and says, well, I just, if he really is innocent, I don't want to jump the gun and say, well, he's absolutely, I don't even hear what was the outcome to this. I know that he is guilty. And I feel like I am doing that a little bit because of how much evidence is coming out against him. And these confessions, like you said, they're very graphic. And I know that from time to time throughout history, NFL players, NBA players, MLB players, they've been, I guess, convicted of something when it was a total lie. It was wrong and their careers were ruined from it, right? But I think in that situation, like I said before the start of this segment, one person going against somebody else could be less believable than 66 people going against one person. Like, that's probably where you can draw the line and say, all right, if it's one person's word against the other, somebody's lying, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody is lying in the situation. And then I look at the odds. I mean, if you're looking at this from just a odds standpoint, it's his word against 66 other people. And all these 66 other people, when you have similar interactions, like, then there's some truth to this, right? That if all these 66 women and the 24 that are filing lawsuits, they all have similar stories. Like, I just don't think that all of them got together and were like, let's tear down Deshaun Watson. Kind of get what I'm saying by that? Like, I don't think it's like this whole overthrow of, man, Deshaun Watson is just this terrible human being that we all need to lie to get him out of the league. Mm-hmm. I think even if all 66, like maybe not all 66 are telling the truth. Maybe it's a handful of them are, and some people are saying, well, we can get money out of this as well. And I don't want to jump the gun on that either because that's also a touchy subject. But you get what I'm saying. There's a lot of different ways and there's a lot of different lies going on and truths on the other hand that we'll have to wait and see how this plays out. But with the end all be all at this, I just think when you look at a guy defending himself and a lawyer defending his client, they're not very believable. And where I can see your side of Deshaun Watson saying, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. And in his mind, I think he's almost manipulated himself to think, I did not do anything wrong at all. Like, some people will lie their way out of it. They'll really lie to themselves and say, no, I am not in the wrong here. Like, let's say you're driving, not saying the severity. I'm separating this, not comparing the severity of this.
Yeah,
let's say you're driving and you're at a 45 and you're going 58.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yep. And you get pulled over. Most of us go, I was only going 13 over. How is that cop going to pull me over? That's ridiculous that I'm getting pulled over going 13 over. Well, by the law, you were speeding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but in your mind, you're going, that's just stupid. I'm not putting anybody in danger. I'm going 58 and a 45. That's not even that
fast. No cars around me.
No cars around, right? You convince yourself of that, and you think you're not in the wrong. But in the end, you really are in the wrong. And so I love how you bring that up because Deshaun Watson's going in his mind, hell, I just DM'd all these Instagram models or Instagram massage therapists and brought them to my place, and yeah, we interacted, but I did nothing wrong. I didn't force them to do anything. I didn't pay them to do anything to me. And it's like, I just, that's where maybe in his mind, he just convinced himself that of all those 66 women, it was all consensual. And that's where you kind of have to draw the line and say, really? That from what they're all saying, it wasn't consensual. So Deshaun Watson may be manipulating himself. I just feel like at this point he's not very believable, and I don't think most of the league is believing him at this point.
Yeah, and another thing is you wouldn't think the defense didn't have a case if they weren't going to, you know, put their case where their mouth is and include the Houston Texans into this lawsuit now too. Because isn't that right? The defense, the lawyer representing the victims, they're now the Houston Texans are now part of the lawsuit as well.
I believe so. I think they were, wasn't it? It came out that like Houston Texans were trying to pay the women coming out to stay quiet, which is weird because I felt like there was so much of a turmoil situation between Deshaun Watson and the Texans. I don't know why the Texans would try to protect Watson, but maybe to get trade value out of him, as dark as it sounds. I mean, they wanted to still get picks for Deshaun Watson, and they did when Cleveland gave it to him.
Yeah. It was last week. Houston, the Texans organization were included into the lawsuit too. They're being sued as well for, like you said, having a role with it. With enabling Watson's actions.
Mm. It's just there's so much going on in this case, and if you're the Cleveland Browns, I don't feel sorry for you one bit. It's not like I'm going to throw you a pity party if Deshaun Watson never plays a snap for you and you're paying him that money. Now, I don't remember if there's a contract void in that, if he does get found guilty, if like they don't have to pay him that money, but I'll tell you one other pawn in this.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield.
Oh, yeah, man.
Where they tried to trade him, and I think he might go to Carolina. I think Carolina's trying to get a deal done for Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
But if Deshaun Watson suspended, and they're like, Baker, we need you to start games, I would double bird them and say, no, start Jacoby Brissett. Go try to win games in the AFC North with Jacoby Brissett. I'm not playing for you.
And you know he has the short fuse where you know what? I'm not even going to say it's a short fuse because he's not in the wrong by doing that.
Not at all.
But you know he would.
He would, and I would back Baker Mayfield 110%. He got completely wronged by the Browns.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing, too. Usually when, like, all right, so the Browns traded for Watson. They obviously commit. They give him, they're signing him to a contract, all that, yada, yada. You would think that, all right, maybe this organization knows something that we don't all know. But at the end of the day, it's the Browns. They would pull off something this stupid as, if it came back to bite him in the butt, I don't think any of us would be surprised because they are the Cleveland Browns.
They are the Cleveland Browns. All right, we're going to take one more final break, a minute break. We'll come back. We'll play some fact or fiction right here on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. 4-2 to the Giants, 20-41 in the year, worst record in baseball. By the way, you want to talk about the Toilet Bowl, the Toilet Series this weekend? They go play Oakland, probably in front of about 1,500 fans. And the Oakland Athletics this year are 21-42. They're one game better than the Royals.
Hey-o!
So how about this? You want to talk about one of the worst series all year to go to? Royals and the Athletics at O.co, likely in front of 2,000 people. And it's a first pitch going to be like 9:05 Friday, Saturday, and then you'll have that late first pitch on Sunday. They have a worse record at this point now, Marco, than the 2004 Royals, and I believe the 2005 Royals. I've tried to push it out of my mind and say this is not the worst Royals team we've seen. Record-wise, it's not looking too good. The 2018 Royals were better at this point than the year 5 rebuild Kansas City Royals. And last night, I'll be honest with you, I did not watch much of that game. I knew Chris Bubich dealt through 5 innings. And get this, you know what happened in the 6th inning when the Giants scored 3? Well, Chris Bubich gave up a run. Here comes Cal Eldred out to the mound. Says his magic words. Next pitch, next hitter, RBI single.
They really are magical in a way.
It's unbelievable. I don't know how anybody in the Royals coaching staff has not looked at that and said, man, we try to say we're analytical and look at the numbers. Has anybody looked at the analytical numbers on Cal Eldred? That maybe we should just rope him off, tie him up, have one of those, like, or those little child belts, the things they for the kids out of control. Just
nope.
Have him on a leash and be like, nope, you come back here. But yeah, last night, not only that, was annoying that Cal Eldred once again, a mound visit didn't work out. Did you by chance see in the 9th inning that Mike Matheny pinch hit Ryan O'Hearn for Michael A. Taylor? Michael A. Taylor has been this team's best hitter for the last 2 weeks, and he's been one of the team's best hitters all season long. He has a walk rate, I think, of like 13%. Also, his WRC plus is the best it has been in his career. Right now, Michael A. Taylor is hitting 280. He was 2-for-3 last night. Mike Matheny pinch hit him for Ryan O'Hearn.
With Nicky Lopez up next. And what, Santana was on first?
Santana was on first.
Yeah.
I know Ryan O'Hearn's been good pinch hitting, but I'm at a loss of words right now.
He could have pinched hit him in the next at bat.
But clearly, Michael A. Taylor, he did not trust Michael A. Taylor to get on base, which he did twice last night. And he also did the night before that. And he also did the game before that. And he has the best walk rate of anybody on the team right now. But yet, it's a righty-lefty matchup. Now, he's facing Duvall, who throws 100 and 102, and then can wipe you out with an 88-mile-an-hour slider, 89-mile-an-hour slider. Still, I'm trusting Michael A. Taylor. It's baffling. It's so baffling that the Royals are this bad. I can't even wrap my head around it. There's not one game for the remainder of the season I will look at and say, I feel like they're going to win tonight. They very well may lose 110. I don't think we can push it off much longer, Marco. They are 21 games under 500. It's June 15th.
So you brought up the mound visits. When Brady Singer started against, would have been the Orioles?
No. Yes.
Yeah. No, Angels. No.
The Baltimore series, it was whoever was before that. I think it was Toronto. I think he started against Toronto.
No, the one where he had like five walks. Was that San
Francisco? That was last two nights ago against San Francisco.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, perfect. Yeah, first game of the series. This comes from James White on Twitter. James from Omaha. I don't know how accurate this is.
I've seen this.
The mound visit stat?
Mm-hmm.
Since May 1st,
yes.
There have been 60 mound visits. Pitching changes not included. Opponents are slashing .292 with a .433, .479 slugging, 28 RBIs, 9 walks, and then 3 hit-by-pitches.
Magic words. Magic words for the Magic Royals at 20-41.
So last night it would have added another walk then, I guess, or another hit. Another hit.
RBI, the on-base percentage is north of .440 at this point after it.
All right, so this season he has a spreadsheet for this. James does.
I appreciate all that hard work, by the way.
Really quick, I know we got to get to fact or fiction, but after a mound visit, hitters this season, .273, .413 on base, .443 slugging, 18 walks, 3 hit-by-pitches still, 24 hits. Where's my RBI? 41 RBIs.
It's damn close to getting on base half the time. That on-base percentage is inching closer to .500. After a mound visit.
He can't even do mound visits right. 50%
chance they get on base. One out of two times they're going to get on base. Just unbelievable. All right, we are going to do some fact or fiction. 5 questions, 5 takes under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, Jerick McKinnon leads the Chiefs in rushing.
I'm going to go fiction on that. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire will be healthy this year, and I think we're in for a big surprise with Clyde. He's had the first year, his rookie year was not bad. He just got hurt in New Orleans at the tail end of the year. We were all fine with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I will, to this day, believe that the fans turned on Clyde Edwards-Helaire when he fumbled against Baltimore last season. Expect a breakout year for Clyde in year 3.
Fact or fiction, Ronald Jones gets cut.
Gosh, I want to say that he will be that one of those surprise cuts because he's just not a good pass blocker and he's not really good out of the backfield catching the ball. You just can't cut a 25-year-old guy like Ronald Jones, who was, I think he rushed for 1,000, if not close to 1,000 yards in the Super Bowl season against Tampa Bay. So I'm going to go fiction. I don't think Ronald Jones is cut. I just think they'll stash two more running backs on the practice squad.
Rushed for 978 that season, okay, 724 the year before. Last year, rushed 428. Fact or fiction, Deshaun Watson doesn't play in 2022.
Gosh, this is so tough to say. I want to say that the NFL is going to suspend him. That's just where I'm leaning towards right now. So I'm going to go fact. I don't think Watson plays this year. I think it'll be one of those suspensions, kind of like Trevor Bauer in baseball, where it's just prolonged week after week after week. So I'll go fact. I don't think he plays.
Fact or fiction, Baker Mayfield is traded to the Panthers by the end of the month.
It seemed like the Panthers are really willing to go out and get him because they just don't have a quarterback right now. I know Sam Darnold is still there. I know P.J. Walker is still there. I want to say Cam Newton might still be there unless he's a free agent. I think a deal gets done, but in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to go fiction on that. I think it'll happen closer to July, but I don't think Baker will be in Cleveland much longer.
You think they send Sam Darnold over?
Possibly. Yeah. I think the Browns would definitely ask for him because they don't want to start Jacoby Brissett this year, especially not in the AFC North.
Darnold started, they went like 3-0. Panthers did.
Yeah, then
the
it was an absolute collapse.
Hurt.
They lost to Dallas, and I think they lost like 7 of their next 9.
Lastly, fact or fiction, Juju Smith-Schuster has over 950 yards receiving and 7 touchdowns for the Chiefs this season.
That may be too high for Juju. I think he will get the most touchdowns of any wide receiver this year. At 950, though, is just too high. They're more well-balanced, the wide receiver group. So I'm going to go fiction, not over 950 yards. I'm going to go fiction under 7 touchdowns, but he'll still have a very, very effective year in Kansas City. Well, there is Ray Charles, so it will be time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We will not have a show on Thursday or Friday. I'll have to do some board work for ESPN Wichita. The Wichita Open is this weekend. So we will be back on Monday after another long layoff. I apologize for that, but we'll have plenty to talk about at Monday at 10 a.m. So you enjoy the rest of the week and the weekend, Kansas City.